south of the border, down Mexico way. That's where I fell in love when the stars above came out to play. And now as I wander.
Hello there, all you expat wannabes. I'm Johnny Mueller, and you're listening to The Expat Files, Living in Latin America, the show that tells you just what it's like to live, work, play, and or retire down here in Latin America. It's a mix of the good, the bad, the ugly, and the great, and it's all right here, so let's get started. Hey, now, here's something that's totally confusing. I'm looking at an article that came out on the big national Latin wire services. It says, this year, Mexico's unemployment rate is 3.5%. As compared to last year's figure of 4%. That would be like around a massive 15% improvement in 1 year, right? Well, talk about figures, statistics, and government lies. If you read down the article, and of course it's in Spanish, it says about 7 paragraphs in that in Mexico, people working in the informal economy that is on the streets, 100% cash, no receipts, not paying taxes, which in my mind is a good thing, because when you do, you get absolutely nothing but more corruption for the effort and the hiring of even more malignant government slugs. And then it says in 2015, 58% of Mexicans worked in the informal economy, meaning about 2% more are working on the books than in the previous year. Which begs the question, how is it possible that in the main headline it says that Mexico's got a 3.5% unemployment rate when 57% of the workers are completely off the books and taking cash? How do they even measure those numbers? And people who are off the books, of course, are going to lie when approached by some government official with a clipboard, right? I mean, come on. How many people are going to tell a government official that they're cheating and not paying taxes? How do you even pull or accumulate numbers like that with any accuracy at all? Then the article says Mexico has around 120 million people and 55.3 million, a little less than half, live in poverty. And the Mexican government's definition of poverty? People making about 10 bucks a day or less. But listen to this. It says here, since 1992, the wealth, that is the revenue collected by the Mexican government, has increased by 5 times. That's 500%. Meanwhile, 48% of government-run free state schools have no sewers or sanitary drainage, and 31% of free government state schools have no drinking water. And get this, 12.8% of free government schools in Mexico have no toilets or sanitary facilities. 12.2% of Mexican public schools do not have any electricity at all. Meanwhile, Mexican government coffers are swelling since they own the state gas and oil production. By the way, the Mexican government's in control of one of the biggest natural gas deposits in the world. Just confirming once again that governments everywhere are run by scumbag, vomitous crooks. Then there's this article that came out last week in Spanish again, and it's entitled, Mexico Prepares Support Programs for Migrants Expected to be Deported by Trump. This is interesting. Allow me to paraphrase it. It says, before U.S. President-elect Donald Trump takes the White House, Mexican President Enrique Peña Nieto is preparing a strategic defense for those returning Mexican immigrants. All right, it's me, Johnny, here. Talk about PC verbiage. Come on, let's tell it like it is. Instead of returning Mexican immigrants, how about returning illegal Mexican deported lawbreakers? And just a little clarification here. If someone says, oh, no, they're not all breaking laws, some of them are very good citizens. Well, for one thing, they're not citizens. Number two, every last illegal immigrant in the United States broke law number one as soon as they walked across the border illegally. So they are all lawbreakers by definition. So don't give me that good productive citizen BS. If the very first action you commit when you come to a new country is coming in illegally, you have committed a criminal act, period. That being too strong, sorry I went off on that little rant. Where were we? Oh yeah. Anyway, the article goes on to say, Mexican President Peña Nieto sent the Mexican State Senate answers to parliamentary questions they had presented in the face of the growing fear of a flood of returning immigrants caused by Trump's threats regarding deportation of millions of undocumented immigrants. Oh, man, there they go, beating you to death with that other PC word, undocumented. All right, so then it says, which Mexican senators and lawmakers called xenophobic and racist positions that go beyond the U.S. presidential campaign. Now, let me stop for a second. Did you get that? Mexican senators and lawmakers, which is an oxymoron in itself, are saying they are afraid of the millions of immigrants that will be deported and returned back to Mexico. They're afraid of their own citizens coming back to their own homeland. Yep, you heard that right. They're afraid of their own people. But this is a corker. The Mexican president said that while it is true, Mexican government has no control over the massive deportations that Trump has announced, but he says, quote, the Mexican government will respond with strategic sense, yeah, whatever that means, and always put the defense of the country's interests and the Mexicans and their well-being as priorities. Yeah, right. Then why haven't you been doing that for the last 50 years or so? Since when have the Mexicans and their well-being been the government of Mexico's priority? Man, if that's not the joke of the century. Well, I was wrong. I did say that was the topper, huh? Nope. The final paragraph here is a topper. It says, quote, this is by the president now, the Mexican government assumes the defense of the dignity, well-being, and rights of Mexicans in the United States as indispensable. Tell me, what planet is this guy living on? Then he says, the Mexican Foreign Ministry will begin to negotiate with the Mexican Ministry of Labor, Public Education, Finance, Social Development, Agriculture, Economics, and Agrarian Development in order to make a comprehensive support program for the returning immigrants. Well, don't you think if you had something like that in place a long, long time ago, Mexicans wouldn't be streaming by the millions into the United States to escape their own homeland? Man, they ought to guillotine all politicians in the public square. Oh, by the way, just a little funny here. Did you know that a guy named Guillotine invented the guillotine? And after the French Revolution popularized the thing so much, his own family changed their name to dissociate themselves from it. Makes sense, huh? How would you feel if your kid's name was Johnny Guillotine? Johnny Guillotine. However, that would make an excellent name for a front man in a metal band. There's an idea. Okay, you get it. That's the end of my rant. However, I must say I applaud that 57% of Mexicans who work off the books do business strictly in cash and pay no taxes. I mean, why support a fat-ass, lying, thieving, hypocritical, malignant bureaucracy if you could somehow avoid it? And I mean that in the kindest, open-hearted spirit of the holidays. By the way, here's a little Latin man on the street story that's sure to amuse. No, I don't mean it's a story about a little Latin man. I mean it's a little story about a Latin man. Anyway, I was at a party the other day. You know, it's Christmas time and all that. They have these things called convivios, you know, office parties and such. A real big thing down here. They're kind of a toned-down version of a U.S.-style drunken office Christmas party. In fact, if a teenage or adult Latin doesn't get invited to at least two or three of them at this time of year, they feel really left out. The word again is convivio. In English, it means with life. Go figure, huh? Well, I guess maybe it does fit. You know, you go to a party, it has to have some kind of lively atmosphere and stuff to be fun, so with life, I guess it does fit. Anyway, I was at one of those convivios talking with a guy who spoke some broken English enough that I knew he was deported from up in the States. There's a lot of them around here, you know. Luckily, he got deported right before the holidays to hang with the folks and hit a few convivios. Now, for those of you who think I'm being unduly harsh here, maybe a classist or even a racist, thinking, how can Johnny jump to those negative conclusions like that? Well, here's the story. If you run into an English-speaking Latin person here in Latin America, and they enunciate correctly and conjugate their words and sentences in a nice, orderly, un-street-like fashion, you know they learned that English in a class at school. In that case, you can bet they hadn't slipped into the U.S. illegally and had been deported. They're just Latins who took up English in school down here. However, if you run into a Latin person down here who speaks a little English, but it's nothing but street barrio English from up in Cleveland or Chicago, there's a 99% chance he was an illegal, caught, and deported, and now he's back in his home country, talking to you. Believe me, I've been down here long enough to know that's the case, that's the story, capiche? Anyway, we got to talking a little bit. You know, Latins who learned a bit of English up in the States love to lay it on a gringo. Anyway, he told me he's starting a job at the beginning of the year at one of the nearby Latin Walmarts. There are thousands of them down here. Cool, I said, and congratulated him. And he told me everyone wants to work at Walmart here in Latin America. So there's a big waiting list, and now they can be picky and hire only people that have got a little bit of English, like him. Then he said, you know, this is a great stepping stone for me. If I just work 1 or 2 years at this Walmart, I can achieve my goal, my dream. And I said, what's that? I mean, what else am I going to say, right? Just leave the guy hanging there and not ask him what his dream was? Come on, that'd be rude. Well, he told me he's got a plan. He works at Walmart for a couple of years down here, gets the experience, works his ass off, proves he's a good worker. That's when his real fantasy of a dream kicks in. You'll never guess. Well, you'll guess the first part. He wants to go back to the States, of course. They all do. And the second part, well, guess what? He wants to transfer to a U.S.-based Walmart, if that's even possible. Who knows? Like he was saying, there are hundreds and hundreds of Walmarts in Latin neighborhoods up in the States where they speak nothing but Spanish. Did you know that? And then he says, or he thinks, he'll have a shoe-in because he'll already be an honored Walmart employee.
Yeah, right, an honored Walmart employee. Sorry.
And you know, dumb me, I said, well, if you're working at Walmart down here, why don't you just stick it out and work your way up the ladder here? He said, what, are you kidding? Walmarts up in the States pay $9 or $10 an hour. Then he snapped his fingers and shook his head and said, big money. Whereas down here, he says, at the very same Walmart doing the very same job, you make around $20 a day. Around $2 an hour, and you have a 44-hour work week. So you get it? His definition of success is to work the very same job that he's doing here in Walmart up in the States. So you can't really blame him, and you can't really blame the Walmart chain for expanding to the third world here in Latin America specifically, because they stock a lot of imported items and charge first world prices, yet they only pay around $2 an hour for their employees. Which is the same basic reason why so many U.S. franchises are making a killing down here. They charge first world prices, yet they only pay $2 an hour. You can pretty much figure for grunt work down here in Latin America, they pay about 1/5 the salary for the same job description up in the States. Imagine the profit margins. Especially when these days up in the States, salaries are the biggest single part of your overhead when you're in the service or retail industry. And if you take just the Walmart example and analyze it, you'll see there's no turning back. There's no way the United States is ever going to bring back manufacturing or unskilled, high-paying, blue-collar jobs, like, for example, in the auto industry. Trump and every other dreamer who thinks that's a possibility apparently never visited a Walmart or a Costco here in Latin America. They're absolute carbon copies of the ones you see up in the States. However, they pay, again, 1/5 of the first world salaries. And people are standing in line down here to get those jobs. Yet deep down, every Latin working those jobs down here wants to get that same job up in the States at a Walmart or Costco, thinking they'll be riding high, making 5 times more. King of the poop pile, tits of the Ritz. It's all so screwed up. There's no way to bring back those golden blue-collar days of the 50s, 60s, and 70s up in the States. That's over forever. So I hope you're not holding your breath that anything's really going to get straightened out in the States now that Trump's in. Well, it ain't. Though it will be fun to watch the show from a nice safe distance here in Latin America. The economy's gutted and the patient is bleeding to death. You know that. Oh, and to reinforce that, listen to this sad fact. Did you know that Walmart is the third largest employer in the world? The first largest being the United States Department of Defense.
Who'da thunk?
The second largest, the Chinese People Liberation Army. Oh, and how about this? If Walmart itself was a nation, it would be the 26th largest economy on earth. In fact, if you took the entire population of Houston, Texas, they could not fill all the jobs in the world's Walmarts. And if you took Home Depot, Kroger, Target, Sears, Costco, and Kmart, and combined them all, they still aren't as big as the Walmart chain. Yep, Walmart, the prototype George Soros transnational dream come true. What a screwed up world we live in, huh? Meanwhile, every up and coming Latin person either wants to work there, shop there, or both, even though their prices are much higher than those big open gigantic food produce mercados. making Walmart here in Latin America, even more so Costco, the place to be seen. I know it sounds crazy, but it's true. You got to get your boots on the ground to see it. And the Costcos down here, well, they're a cut above Walmart because it costs around 10 to 20 bucks a year to join. It's a big box membership club store, right? Which instantly cuts out to 60 or 70% of Latins making only around 300 to 400 bucks a month. Yep, that Costco membership card is something Latins proudly display in that first flap in their wallet. Yep, right along with that stack of maxed out credit cards. Yep, down here, having a Costco membership card is a symbol of Latin upper middle class. And it's funny, people even dress up a bit to go to Costco and shop. Not so much with Walmart, but you do see some of that. However, Latins do dress up when they go to mediocre U.S. franchise restaurants like TGIF, Sizzler, Applebee's, IHOP, and Starbucks. Yep, those are places to be seen, so you have to look your best, right? Yep, U.S. franchises are bathrobe and curler-free zones. That said, one more very interesting thing that came to light recently about Mexico. Why are we talking about Mexico? This is Mexico Day, I guess. Because according to stats, 1.5 million gringos are living there now. I get many emails from people living in Mexico, and in fact, at my Expat Insider seminars, I always have a couple of gringos or gringas living in Mexico in attendance. Now, you know I always mention that when you move down to Latin America, that is, vote with your feet, become an expat and all that, it's one of the last opportunities you'll have in your life to really shrink your footprint and become as anonymous as you want to be. And of course, anyone who's got a brain up in the States knows that you don't want to be an idiot and put all your dats on social media like Facebook, and definitely don't want to give away your dats on the internet to every pop-up window that says, sign in here to win a free iPad. Because if you do, you're just asking for trouble, the least of which is being bombarded with so much crap and spam you can't delete the junk fast enough. So in the end, just remember, Google's not a benevolent organization. They're actually in the business of selling you and your photo and your dats to the highest bidder. Yep, Google, Facebook, Twitter, even LinkedIn are cyber pimps, and they're pimping you out whether you know it or not. Which begs the question, how much of your own personal data have you unwittingly given away on the net? Well, it could be worse. You could be a clueless Latin guy living in Mexico. Listen to this. This one comes from the Mexican journal Crónica. That's cronica.com.mx. We'll translate some of this here. The title of the article, Mexico Struggles with Widespread Cyber Theft of Personal Data. It says, the cyber theft of personal and business data is more than widespread in Mexico, illustrating the limited power that government institutions possess to counter this rapidly evolving, ever elusive new type of crime. In fact, it's an industry now in Mexico. It says Mexico has become a haven for black market data theft of all kinds, and the potential profits are considerable. The former commissioner of the Mexican Autonomous Crime Bureau, tasked with protection of personal data, says, quote, a medical file in Mexico and throughout Latin America now can be worth up to $10,000 because the information enables cyber terrorists to receive insurance, pension, and other government and private benefits when used to impersonate people. For example, one of the easiest criminal scams is to sell the data so that someone else can use their medical benefits. Government officials also point out that there's widespread cyber impunity, whatever that is. They say because of Mexico's weak and woefully inadequate legislative tools and the failure to enforce existing laws, leaving the cyber criminals far ahead in the race against the government. The article also says that cyber theft is not the work of isolated hackers, but definitely the work of a complex criminal organization. According to Sebastian Brenner, a security strategist for Symantec Corporation in Latin America, he says there are very well-structured groups with experts for every stage of the criminal process, from infiltration, capturing data, and commercialization and sale of the stolen data. He says the data from a stolen email account is worth around $30, while that of an internet gaming account could reach up to $3,000 in value. He said at the lowest level, there are cybercrime marketing enterprises, as well as competitor firms and others that specialize in creating new electronic systems to sell and disperse the stolen data through international markets. Organized crime gets into the act every step of the way. Ultimately, the information is used for theft, bribery, extortion, and kidnapping. Worse yet is the problem that Mexicans and other Latin American citizens are so willing and so easily give up their own personal data to practically any official-looking organization or websites that might ask for data with a simple request. For example, nearly every Latin person who uses the internet regularly has responded to false or counterfeit emails. Typical examples are the strategically placed bots that appear to be from the likes of Google, Yahoo, Facebook, and others, requesting data to update accounts, warning that accounts will be closed, advising that data or memory will be lost unless they respond immediately and give up their data to one of these trick or Trojan horse emails. The problem is that Latin Americans have all the cutting-edge technology of the first world, but without the sophistication or technical knowledge to understand the importance of guarding their own personal data. In fact, one cyber terrorist bragged that in 2 minutes he could get virtually any Latin computer or smartphone user to give up all their personal data, even their passwords. Then, software and security antivirus giant Norton says cybercrime in Mexico has doubled since 2013. The Norton company highlighting Mexico's status as a regional hub for online crime, while the Mexican government finds it impossible to keep up with the evolving technology. They estimate now that Mexican cybercrime is in the range of $5 billion a year. Then it says Mexico's director of the National Institute of Penal Sciences, whatever that is, told an international cybercrime conference taking place in Mexico City that cybercrimes were now generating many more criminal complaints than those associated with piracy or even drug trafficking. Then it said over half of Latin American companies and banks reported cybercrime attacks in 2012, and three quarters of them reported cybercrime issues in 2015, though less than 1% of those reports end up in the media. I wonder why. It says in Mexico, the combination of rampant organized crime and high levels of internet connectivity has placed Mexico 8th in the world for identity theft. On top of that, it's now the world's largest distributor of child pornography. Then it says, while Mexican organized crime is not thought to be directly involved in organized child pornography, the internet has become a very important tool for gangs, which use social media and YouTube for extortions and targeting kidnapped victims and home invasions. All right, just one last thing about identity theft here in Latin America. The Latin magazine El Economista reports, a large international security company set up an experiment in which their own company employees planted 500 wallets across Mexico's capital city. There were false phone numbers and personal identity information in those wallets, along with some false credit cards, but no money. They then tracked down how many wallets were actually returned or reported to the supposed owners. Well, only 47 were returned, or 9% of the total. How about that? Less than 1 out of 10 decent Good Samaritans in Mexico, at least in that experiment. And according to another extensive study, 9 out of 10 Mexicans carry sufficient information in their wallets to be victims of identity fraud should the wallets be lost or stolen. Which begs the question, if you lost your wallet up in the States, how useful and valuable would it be to someone who had bad intentions? All right, let's change the subject and read an email. This one comes from Mr. B. I want to move to Latin America with my wife and kids. I have a Canadian driver's license and I love driving truck. I'm hoping to continue driving once we relocate to Central America. What's the demand like for commercial truck drivers? Do I need some connections to get a foot in the door in this field? Anyway, Johnny, your show is both a blessing and inspiring. Signed, Mr. B and family. All right, so Mr. B, I want to give you a nice big general answer here that should give you some idea. It's like this. For those who do have a career up in the States or Canada, anywhere in the first world, and want to transfer it down here in Latin America, in your case, you're talking about driving a truck. Well, it's certainly true. Trucks really do move Latin America. There used to be a lot of railroads, but those have kind of gone defunct as they have in the States pretty much. I'd say 98% of all goods, maybe more, are hauled by truck. So yes, there are plenty of truck driving jobs, just as there are plenty of carpentry and plumbing jobs available too. Not to mention stone workers, contractors, mechanics, masons, electricians. Whatever you've got up in the first world, they've got it down here too. However, and this is a big however, you'll find the pay in any one of these careers, that is, working for someone else, is going to be about a fifth of what they pay up in the first world for the very same skill. And yes, they have unions here, but they're very weak. Most of those unions, by the way, are for government service employees. Figures, huh? So yes, if you come down with a first world skill, you'll certainly find a job, especially if you speak some Spanish, though it'll be difficult to have a truly first world style of life unless you are the owner-operator of the business. Yep, that's the hitch. That's how it always is, huh? That's true pretty much anywhere. It's the owner who makes the investment, takes the risks, and therefore makes the real money if the enterprise is a success. So again, bottom line, if you have a career up in the States and plan on transferring it down here to Latin America, you better think about being the boss unless you want to knock your lifestyle down a few notches. Don't plan on working for anyone else and actually making a decent wage. But again, it all depends on your lifestyle and if you've got a little nest egg or not, since most people who come down don't really find their calling in a business sense until they've had some boots on the ground for 6 months or so. But much earlier than that, the ideas start coming, and then comes the problem of sorting out what you think is the best project for you, because you can't do it all. In fact, over the years, I've got a couple of small notebooks just filled with cool business ideas, but I have to live a few more lifetimes to try them all. And let's face it, even though you've got that gringo advantage working for you all the time, and you see details and such that Latins will never pick up on, still, part of making money in any successful business involves a bit of personality, timing, and luck. And as far as doing business up in the first world, first of all, you don't have the gringo advantage. Second, you have countless government regulations screwing with you at every turn. And generally, if you don't have an internet company, you'll need a hell of a lot of cash to get started. So whatever job or business venture you get into down here in Latin America, it'll cost you a lot less, you'll have much less regulation, and you'll have that all-important gringo advantage going for you. And of course, it's the strongest and in full force the farther you're away from tourist destinations. And the fact is, I know of almost no expat gringos, ones who have successful businesses down here today, who thought of the idea while living up in the States and brought it down with them. Unless it was an internet-based business you could do anywhere, they'll freely admit they never dreamed they'd be doing what they're doing now. But you know, when you've got boots on the ground and opportunities present themselves, you jump in or some other gringo will.
South of the border.
This is the Expat Files, living in Latin America. If you want me to help you out with your own Plan B, just schedule a one-on-one consult. Send me an email, theexpatfiles@gmail.com. And if you want to learn how to move forward with your own Plan B from right up there in the States, go to www.expatplanb.com and check out my three videos. See ya. Nos vemos.